patreon.com/thewalkoffpodcast. $4 a month gets you in there.
Baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
Good morning and welcome to the walk-off, everybody. I'm Scott Belford, joined as always by the best co-host in the biz, Adam Mack. And look at us, bud. We get to show our smiles this morning.
We're doing it. It was a
you
win.
Do you feel less panicked? Did you feel panicked at all? Is there such a thing as a must-win game 4 games into the season?
No, but of course it felt that way. I mean, Kikuchi, the stopper, stopped the bleeding. Great. So many positives to take away from last game.
There really
were. Where
do
we even begin?
Listen, and this is the thing, is that obviously the negative Neds and negative Nancys of the world will obviously step in and say, hey, if you're going to use the excuse small sample size, it's early for bad things. You got to do it for good things. And sure, if you wish to walk around with a little black cloud over your head all the time, then yes, that's absolutely the way you can look at last night's game. But all in all, our fifth starter versus Kansas City's fifth starter. Phew.
Yeah,
we look better than KC in that position.
Look, maybe this is the nicest way of putting this, but if we can have one of the best fifth starters in baseball, we'll take that.
Heck yeah, that's a win.
Our five versus your five, and we're winning. I'll take that. You know, I don't know about Garrett Cole versus Manoa. We'll see how that plays out. But you say Kikuchi versus whoever the Yankees are strutting out that's healthy at number five. I mean, I probably still would take that guy over Kikuchi, but maybe not. Maybe not. I don't know.
Not right this year. It's so far so good, knock on all the wood. And I mean, obviously small sample size, but Kikuchi has made some substantial changes to the way he pitches and it looks like it's working. Listen, we're going to delve into all of it. We are going to get into the positives of yesterday. We are going to talk Kikuchi at length and then also shine a little bit of, I know that it's been probably a negative show to watch the last week. We've tried not to make it that way, but there's just certain things that happen at times. And I know mailbag probably seemed like a bummer with all of the comments. You know, the Jays were 1-3. There's a little bit of like collar pulling going on.
It was the toxic positivity was a tough swallow for the last couple days. Let's say that.
So we're going to flip the switch, the script, I should say, flip the script on some of the things, and we're going to put a positive spin on Bichette, a really cool little stat, Adam, that you dug up will bring light to. Biggio, another little stat you dug up that I was very impressed with. We'll talk Varsho. Matt Chapman has looked really good, so we will have a positive feel to this show today. And if that's not what you're after, well, my sincere apologies.
Then we can end by talking about Brandon Belt. How's that sound? Okay.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I just wanted to say going into their next start. So yes, sure. Small sample size, but just looking ahead, going into their next start. And I would have to assume confidence in Manoa to have a good start today. Relatively high. Your confidence in Gausman looked good in his first game, so that's got to be high. Then in the next three, just for, not for the season, but just for their next start, what is your order of confidence levels? We got Bassett, we got Berríos, and we got Kikuchi.
I mean, I'm nervous about all of them. My highest confidence currently is we're going to do the old recency bias and go with Kikuchi.
Really? Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, okay. No, he. He's leapfrogged Jose Barrios for me this week. I'm hoping for, I guess I'm confident for Chris Bassett. I don't know why.
Hey, you know
there
what?
There were some real red flags with Chris Bassett, but that's bold putting Kikuchi ahead of him, and I don't hate it. Kikuchi looked great last night.
Again, recency bias. Like, it really is. Just look.
Let us know in the comments. DM us. Send us an Instagram. Whatever. I think this is a fascinating little question that I've come up with here. I think it's
Where is your confidence level with the bottom three starters in this rotation? That is a great question.
Just for the next start, right? Not for the season long. I think season long, I'd still probably
season long. I have to go with Bassett.
Yeah. But for their next start,
he says nervously.
I know it's wild. So I don't know. We're not totally on the Kikuchi bandwagon, although we both want to be.
Yes.
But it is interesting. We'll see how Bassett manages that pitch clock in his next outing. And I think that's going to. We'll see.
That truly will be the story. Okay, we're going to get into it here. I do wish to tease our interview for tomorrow. Youngin in the Blue Jays system, 21-year-old out of the Dominican Republic, Nazwell Paulino, who is pitching with the Dunedin Blue Jays, currently probably getting that call up to high A here within the next month or so, depending on his performance. He is a Spanish-speaking player, is his first language. So he sat down with us with his translator, which was a very cool experience for Adam and I, who have never done that before. So definitely humbling on my point, just watching this kid switch back and forth between English and Spanish as first language, and just the guts to sit down with us for 30 minutes for an interview in his second language. It was awesome, and it's a very cool interview. So we'll be releasing that tomorrow, just a heads up to all the grounds crew out there that might want to see what Paulino has up his sleeve. All right, my dude, this is where we get to kind of celebrate yesterday's victory. 4-1, putting the Blue Jays at 2-3 on the season. It was the battle of the fifth starting lefties for the Kansas City Royals and Toronto Blue Jays. Yusei Kikuchi versus Bubek. And it was a very encouraging game.
Yep.
They didn't blow the door down, and I don't think we can, you know, give the signal that offense has been found. However, we did see a little bit of power. We did see the Blue Jays not buckle when things got tough. A lot of positives to take out of yesterday's start, and it was needed.
Yeah.
Like, again, we touched off the very, very top that there is really no point in any baseball season at the 5-game mark where you can actually say this is a must win. That's a ridiculous way to look at a 162 game season. However, it sure felt like it.
Yeah, the fan in me sure felt that way for sure.
The fan and everyone just was like, please, can we just stop the bleeding? That is the starting pitching. And that's what you say. That's what you say did last night. And
here's why it feels must win is because the Rays are 5-0. So just to start the season 1-4 and just to already feel like the Rays are running away with it and not able to beat the Royals. Yeah. Sure felt like yesterday could have really set a negative tone for the rest of the week, but.
And losing 9-4 to the Royals is a tough one to swallow.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you're putting in a pitcher who had some real serious woes last year in Jose Barrios. And as a fan base, we're all just like, please, baseball gods above, let him find his career average, please. You know, and then that was not the case. So honestly, yesterday was a great game to watch. It was fun. The bullpen looked really good. And that was something that I did wish to touch on here. Yes, Yusei Kikuchi came out and gave us two strikeouts, a walk, a whip under one, five innings, just under 70 pitches. He had a good pitch count there. Then John Schneider wouldn't let him go a third time through the order. Probably the right thing to do early in the season. Continue to build Yusei's confidence before we stretch him out any further than that. And then the bullpen came in and didn't allow a run for the whole time.
Yep.
Jordan Romano looked good.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy Garcia looked good.
Demeza, four strikeouts, four batters.
Give it to me every time. Yes, it's the Kansas City Royals. And again, if you wish to be that little negative Ned or Nancy, then go right ahead. But I think that the Blue Jays needed this. I think the pitching staff needed this. I think the pitching staff, top to bottom, needed a game like this, right? Where they were relied on. This was a game for the pitching. I mean, the offense put up four runs, but they didn't run away with it. At no point during the game did you feel like if the Royals came back that the Blue Jays, it wasn't that type of game.
Yeah. The contrast in how I felt watching Berríos pitch versus Kikuchi pitch. Berríos gave up three runs in that first inning, and it just felt like, here we go again.
Yes.
You know, it was singles to death in the first inning. And it just felt like, is he going to get through the first inning? You know, and to his credit, he did. I mean, he gave up a lot of runs, but yeah, he gave us innings, which we needed.
He did. Yes.
So credit where credit's due. I know it's an ugly thing or an ugly silver lining to focus on with Jose Berríos, but
truly the worst positive we could find. But yes, it is.
That's the toxic positivity that I'm bringing to the table here on a Wednesday morning. However, to contrast that with Yusei Kikuchi, did give up the home run in the second inning. Jays were down 1-0. Could have gone the same way. It could have been
You know what?
Great. Oh, here we go. And he didn't. He buckled in.
Let's talk that second inning. Because the Franimal hit that home run that you just brought up. Then he gave up a single to Duffy. And then I don't know if everyone here remembers, it got worse than that. Remember, he then had the wild pitch. Duffy goes to second. And then there's the long fly ball that Merrifield makes that diving catch on. The runner tags and goes to third base. Now there's one out. He'd just given up a home run. He just made that mistake with the wild pitch. The single that Duffy hit, it was a seeing eye single. It just found a hole, right? Like, as you say, Kikuchi, a guy who you know the spotlight is on, you could buckle there, right? Yeah. You could get nervous. You could maybe allow another run or two. And then he didn't, man. He gave up a shallow fly ball to left field to Dalton Varsho, who then had a rocket with his arm, nailing the runner at third for a double play. Out of the inning, he settled right in after that. This is the true silver lining. This is the true positive I take from this Yusei Kikuchi start.
Yeah, I mean, and you touched on it. Like, this is, oh, I get goosebumps thinking about this. We watched the offseason, a lot of Jays fans be frustrated with the departure of Teoscar and Lourdes and bringing in these defensive guys, right? And how, you know, okay, well, even if we win more, it's not going to be as exciting. Like, these guys are studs in the outfield. And it is like three or four highlights defensively every game.
Yeah.
From our outfield troop. Yeah, that Whit Merrifield diving catch fading back towards center field. Cool for him in Kansas City, but also it's like, that's our second baseman out there.
Exactly.
In the outfield.
Love
right?
to see it.
It's just, this is one thing that, oh man, if Yusei Kikuchi pitches himself into a jam and we have the defensive abilities to just help him out, yeah, you know, just throw him a lifeline. Like, if that's Teoscar in right field, he's not catching that one that Merrifield caught, right? Lourdes, I would say, could have done what Dalton Varsho did. Phenomenal arm on him. Credit there.
Yes.
But this is a great outfield. And if our pitchers can just not give up the long ball this year, if we can just keep it in the green, not a lot of stuff's going to be dropping in.
I agree, man. It was very encouraging, and it has been all season watching the outfield. It's the outfield really has been the big positive in a 2-3 season so far. To go back to the Kikuchi start, I just love seeing the man have a plan and executing, which is something that he's done really well so far this spring in that first game of the year. He's got four pitches in his fastball, slider, curveball, and change. The curveball is somewhat new. He is using it regularly. The fastball, and this is what's really interesting to me, because I always really believed Yusei Kikuchi's biggest problem was that he was shying away from his fastball. They could not convince him that it was the weapon that it is, which is 98 miles with movement from the left-hand side. But this is what I kind of respect out of Pete Walker and this front office, is that they were like, okay, Yusei Kikuchi, 31 years old, turning 32 in the next couple months. At no point in his pitching career has shown a willingness to lean on his fastball as that major pitch. So let's back him off of it. Let's make him feel comfortable. Yusei Kikuchi is throwing the fastball at a 37% rate, which is the lowest rate among starting pitchers in baseball.
That these stats really popped my eyes out before the game. They brought up the usage rate of his fastball last season, 51%. And then they compared it to 51. Spring training this year was 39%. And you just mentioned it's even lower now in his first outing. I mean, I don't track on a day-to-day basis what's a pitch use for each pitcher. I just knew Kikuchi was looking good in spring training, and my dumb monkey brain was like, he must finally be using his fastball more.
Me
so
too.
When I saw that stat on the broadcast, I was like, oh, I thought he wasn't using his fastball enough. Turns out he was using it too much.
It reminded me of the talk we had with the mental performance department, the head of the mental performance department, Robert DiBernardo. And basically his whole mantra is to get to the crux of the player and what makes them confident. And again, like you and I were just talking, right? Because we do see such potential and what a weapon that high 90s fastball with movement from the left-hand side is. But again, he just never truly believed in it like everyone else did. And watching him see some success going to what makes him comfortable on the mound, and this pitch clock scenario where he doesn't have a choice, right? Jano's there. He's like, this is what you're throwing. And Kikuchi's just like, all right, let's do it.
Well, another stat that kind of popped up again, spring training, I get it, but they also popped up like, across MLB spring training, he was first in ERA. He was first, like he was first or second in like four or five categories.
In every category.
And it was the whiff rate. He's first in MLB whiff rate. So swinging strikes. And again, spring training, I get it. But if this is
pretty encouraging for a pitcher who last year's biggest Achilles heel was getting hit and getting hit hard,
right?
Right.
So, man, I hope this is sustainable. I mean, we'll see. I mean, it's going to take more than one real major league regular season start to get me to buy that Yusei Kikuchi jersey, but this is absolutely showing some signs of life. So we'll take it.
You couldn't draw it up any better as to how to ease him into the season as well. You know, like let him have a spring training where it builds his confidence and he looks good. Let him start the first major league regular season game he pitches against the Kansas City Royals. Let's ease him into this. But from every, well, and I know that there are caveats, little asterisks on these, with it being spring, with it being the Royals.
Look, this
but
is still
let's take
this
it.
Is a high pressure start. Like we talked about Alek Manoah and the, you know, the big game factor of opening day,
a lot of eyes
or
on
whatever. A lot of eyes, a lot of expectations, a lot of like, oh, what are we gonna get here today? Especially after what Berríos gave us the day before. I mean, hopefully set the tone for, you know, confidence is contagious, you know, and momentum is a real thing. So hopefully he can build on it. He's got the Angels in his next start. No Anthony Rendon in that start.
I mean, we'll end on the fact that he was economical with his pitches too, which you like to see. He was under 70 pitches thrown by the fifth inning. He could have probably gone another inning or two.
And how do you feel about that? How do you feel about the decision to not push
I loved it too.
I loved it too. Because that absolutely could have been, let's send him out there for the fifth. He's got the low pitch count, and it could have been a four-run inning, and now we're having an entirely different talk. So quit while you're ahead.
Win.
Yeah.
Great move by John Schneider and Pete Walker to just kind of be like, listen, he got through five. He's going to get the W. He had an incredible game with 68 pitches. He didn't walk almost anybody. He gave up almost no hits. Like, again, he had a 0.8 whip by the end of that game yesterday. I mean, you can't ask for more than that out of your starting pitcher. So great job by
if our number five pitcher, again, and I'll just end on this too, is if our number five pitcher can give us 30 starts and he's pitching into the fifth, that's 150 innings, which, you know, is not 200, but for your number five guy, you'll take that. If we get 150 innings out of him and we're not pulling our hair out for each of them, that's a win.
Again, and we've mentioned this, if he can pitch to a 4.5 ERA and give us 140 to 150 innings, that's very close to probably the best fifth starter in baseball. So I would take it.
Yeah. Definitely. Okay.
Anything over that is my goodness gravy. Okay. So the next segment is for everyone out there who says that this has just been too negative, a negative soup lately. So let's put a positive spin on this and celebrate some of our victories from last night's game and from some of the players who have been having some really good seasons the first five games of the year. Matt Chapman, top of the list. He is on a tear as he starts this final year of his contract. He, of course, is a free agent as he goes into the offseason next year.
Yep.
Poised to make some big money, especially if he can continue to look like he has. Honestly, the guy is on fire. He is hitting the ball all over the stadium. He's hitting it in the gaps. He's hitting doubles. They just moved him up to the cleanup spot where he continued to hit and hit with runners in scoring position, something that this team has struggled with over the last few games. He just feels settled into this team. Not that he wasn't by the end of the year last year, but Matt Chapman definitely struggled out of the gate in 2022. And it's just, I think it was just a little bit new surroundings, uncomfortable. And now that he's in his element, oh, look out.
Well, I do wonder about the confidence of being the new guy versus being one of the established guys, and how much exaggerated that is just by the fact, like, if we didn't make all those trades this offseason, the difference from last year to this year is, well, he's not the new guy. Everybody knows him from last year, but it's still not as substantial as we made these big additions. We added Kiermaier. We added Varsho. We added Belt, right? Mm-hmm. So now those three guys are all coming in and going, Matt Chapman's one of the guys welcoming us, right? Like, he's part of the welcoming committee. So that's got to be something in the head as well, right?
Absolutely. Being the new kid in town. Absolutely. It's a big deal, man. It takes sports out of it. It's a big deal in life, right? Be that fish out of water.
You're either being shown to your locker or you're showing the new guy to their locker, right? So it's like, he's not going to hit 533 with an OPS plus of almost 300 all season long, but
while he is, put him in that cleanup spot.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, just from like a fan confidence, which shouldn't matter, but I think does like impact the on-field performance, where you know, like last year, he started slow, like you said. And I think by the end of the year, had a low, probably 230 average. I could look it up. But having a hot start just gets that monkey off the back. You know, it's just, yeah, I'm good. And I know it. And I'm feeling good. Again, he's going to have slumps. But I bet you by the end of the season, he's 260 average. What do you think, Matt Chapman? Or you missed the power stroke of Matt Chapman?
Maybe one of the big things that stood out to me about Matt Chapman is that he is hitting the ball all over the field. He's not pulling it quite as much as he was in previous seasons. This is what we saw in 2018 out of Matt Chapman when he was seventh in the league in MVP voting. This is what we saw to Matt Chapman when he was hitting 33 home runs with the Oakland Athletics in that cavernous stadium that is the Oakland Coliseum.
I think 2018, he hit 278 with 24 home runs. I mean, if we can get that Matt out Chapman, of him this year.
If this is where he settles in and he's just comfortable, and Matt Chapman doesn't need to put any pressure on his shoulders. My God, look at the dudes hitting in front of him. Matt Chapman, look at the dudes hitting after him. Matt Chapman just needs to swing the bat and do his thing.
Well, and that goes to the being the new guy in town, right? When you're new, you got something to prove. So last year had something to prove. This year, like you said, he can just settle into the fact that he's like, I don't have to be the guy. I just have to be one of the guys. Like, there's just that lineup is so stacked. And again, that's why it's nice to see Dalton Varsho get off to a good start too, because
yes,
it could have gone the other way as well, where he's 0 for 20 at this point in the season. And we're going, well, at least he can catch a ball out there. But
I think it's safe to say that the Blue Jays, even the front office, was like, listen, if two of the three new additions are amazing, you're going to miss on one of them. And if you get to choose which ones are big successes, Varsho and Kiermaier, I think, just need to be higher up on that list than Brandon Belt, who I still believe will eventually find it. We just might not see the real Brandon Belt till June, which will be infuriating to a lot of the fan base.
Myself included. Dalton Varsho, worth noting, is hitting 188 right now. 7 strikeouts versus 3 walks. He is 3 for 16. However, did get the home run last night.
Mm-hmm. Bunt single.
Bunt single. Yeah, that was nice.
And that bunt single was in a good spot too, where it brought Bichette around to third base, and then he eventually scored on Danny Jansen's single. I guess it wasn't a single. It wound up because they threw out Varsho at second from the outfield.
Fielder's choice.
That wound up, yeah, fielder's choice. But while talking of this, I did wish to bring this up because some of you might remember this from the mailbag about a month ago. Mark D reached out on Twitter and he said, hey guys, been listening to the podcast for a couple months now. It's awesome. Really love the content. My favorite play in baseball has almost completely disappeared from the game. The drag bunt. My commitment to the Jays this year is the first player to bunt for a base hit this season, I'm getting their jersey. Your guess on who that will be. So I said, hey, Mark, thanks for reaching out. Glad you enjoyed the show. I feel pretty confident the guy whose jersey you'll be getting is Dalton Varsho. He had 7 bunt singles last season, more than the entire Jays combined. Mark reached out last night with a quick little sentence saying, getting a Varsho jersey.
Hey, there's worse jerseys to get, I think, as far as an investment that you're going to get to wear to the ballpark for the foreseeable future with confidence. Dalton Varsho is a good get.
Continuing with our sunshine and roses portion of the show, the optimism. We're putting it on display here, and we're going to now talk a guy who we have probably been too negative about, Bo Bichette. Listen, sometimes there is an extreme talent on your team that for whatever reason, the Achilles heel in their game really drives everyone nuts. And that in Bo Bichette's case is his defense. As a fan, sometimes you forget what an incredible talent he is at the plate because he makes the odd bonehead play in the field and it wears on you as a fan. But I do think it is important to put in perspective what a stud and how lucky we are as a fan base to have Bo Bichette in this lineup. Okay, he is still hitting 400 for the season. He had another hit last night. He is, since September 1st, I think he is still hitting over 400. And if not, it's like 398 or something like that. His last 5 weeks of baseball have been the best in the league, pretty much. But that's not all. Adam, you sent a stat yesterday, and I'll let you take over here, but it blew my mind. And I wound up tweeting it out, our group chat comment there, because, and it's well over, it's pushing 200 likes on Twitter because it is such a crazy cool stat.
Well, basically, it comes down to this. Friend of the show, Hey Commie, brought up the fact that, like, other than Manny Machado, who's probably the active Major League Baseball player with the best shot at getting to 3,000 hits. I think he's at 1,600 right now, and he just turned 30.
Yeah.
So we'll see how he ages. But other than that, Bo Bichette might be, and again, it's relatively speaking, early in his career. However, he is approaching 500 hits. So this is what I wanted to look into, is how close is he right now? He's at... was he at 491? Very close. The stat that I think you were excited by and Twitter got excited for was, now I've lost it. How fast did Mike Trout? You've heard of Mike Trout, right? Pretty good ball player.
Heard of Mike Trout, yes.
How fast did he get to 500 hits? Well, he did it in 423 career games. So, if Bo can get 9 hits in the next 24 games, he'll have gotten to 500 career hits quicker than Mike Trout. Also looked at Juan Soto, one of the best hitters in the game. 480 games to get to 500 hits.
You know what's incredible about this stat, Adam, is that it's not like Juan Soto and Mike Trout didn't have all sorts of hype on them as they came up at the same time, right? Baseball really appreciated these gentlemen as young men and what they were doing in the game. And I think that Bo Bichette maybe isn't getting enough credit for what he does at the plate. Think about that. Like, just put that in perspective in your mind for a minute, okay? He is going to get to 500 hits before Mike Trout and Juan Soto did.
Also, I also want to throw in this too. We talked Manny Machado being the likeliest candidate playing right now to get to 3,000. He did it in 439 games, got to 500 hits. So
he'll beat Manny as well.
He'll almost certainly beat Manny Machado to that. So the pace is there. I mean, led the American League in hits both of the previous two seasons.
Just turned 25.
Turned 25.
He is a talent. That is incredible. That is incredible. Yeah. He's going to be Mike Trout and Juan Soto and Manny Machado to 500 hits.
Yeah. For the record, there isn't a easy list of quickest to 500 that I could find. But I looked up every name that I could think of and nobody else was close. The only one, Albert Pujols, did get to 3,000 hits. He did it in like under 400 games. So Albert Pujols, for anybody, maybe the younger
home run. Yeah.
Maybe the younger people don't appreciate how insanely, incredibly talented of a hitter.
Yeah.
Albert Pujols was,
one of the greatest.
Yeah. He burst onto the scenes and set baseball on fire in the early 2000s. And
yeah.
So that's the only person, the only hitter I could find that got to 500 hits before Bo Bichette is about to. And it's inevitable, I think, because in the next 24 games, he'd have to have a batting average of like 110. yeah. and he'll still get it's to it happening. Before Mike Trout. So, he'll do I mean, it. Yeah, it, a serious slump, and he's still going to get there, I think. So,
Albert Pujols busted on the scenes of Major League Baseball as a 25-year-old saying he's 19 all those years ago.
Yeah, yeah, but still pretty good at ball.
Speaking right. of stats that you impressed me with yesterday, you were a real little busy real stat monkey. Beaver yesterday. Yeah, yeah.
Ooh, stat beaver. I like that. No, stat beaver, because that's more keep Canadian.
Canadian.
Yes. And beavers collect trees, which, you know, for their dam.
Yeah.
And monkeys collect stats bananas. Stats
are your trees in this.
Stats are my trees in this analogy. In this okay, we did it.
Stat incredible beaver. Metaphor we're doing. All yes. right. You're,
whip you, up the merch. Someone in the you. Discord design that stat beaver emoji. Okay.
Tell us about Kevin Biggio and why he is a phenomenal bench piece for this team.
Well, very limited usage at this point so far in the season. 9 plate appearances, 2 for 5. So 5 at bats. He's hitting 400, but he has 3 walks already. So he's been on base the 5th most of any of our players. It has basically half the plate appearances of anyone else.
Pretty impressive.
It's third pretty highest impressive. OPS on the team. He's got an OPS over 1,000 right now because of his ability to draw walks.
And this is where maybe the front office is hanging on to Kevin waiting for robot umps robo in 2024. Umps. Because I know if it's a set strike zone, that's the exact same every time. Kevin Biggio is going to have a 400 on base percentage, almost without a doubt. Almost without a doubt. Without pitchers being able to squeeze Kevin Biggio and get those outside strikes where it's just outside, but the ump is giving it to him. Kevin Biggio is going to be an on base machine.
And for anyone who's like maybe a casual Kevin Biggio familiarist, this is not based on a small sample size of 9 plate appearances. This is his career. This is what his strongest asset has been, is strike zone recognition, right? His baseball acumen through the roofs, strike zone awareness is right up there. Speaking of robo umps, is it just because of the pitch clock and all the other rule changes? So we have other things to focus on. It doesn't feel like the strike zones have been ugly this year.
It does feel like better umpiring, and maybe
I know they were great in the World Baseball Classic,
weren't they?
But
I mean, there were umpires. This is the thing. Whenever we bring this up, people are like, "There were still bad calls." Yes, there were still bad calls. It just wasn't as glaring as it felt last year by the end of the season. I don't know if some of you remember the end of the season, but the umpiring in September last year, everyone across baseball was losing their mind. People were literally starting robot chants in the crowd. It's like, we want robots.
Yeah. Domo arigato. I remember all season long, it felt like umpire strike zone scorecards were being tweeted out, right? This guy had a 64% strike zone accuracy or whatever, right? So I wonder if that's if the numbers are still bad, but everybody's just too busy tweeting about the pitch clock or how much stolen bases are up. I don't know. I like you said, it hasn't been glaring, so even if they are missing calls, it feels better, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm wrong about that, don't correct me. Okay. Let me just live this blissful ignorance and think that umpires ain't that bad.
Let's end this little segment here on Dalton Varsho, just shining some positivity on him. Yes, his batting average needs to come up a little bit, and I think it just will naturally, but he is hitting cleanup. He looked great yesterday with a Oppo Taco. Again, the thing that has impressed me about Dalton Varsho is for a dude who has was advertised heavily as not being able to hit lefties. He's hit lefties this whole season. As a dude who was advertised as constantly pulling the ball, he has hit the ball all over the field. Something that he did say in spring training that he was really going to concentrate on was hitting the ball more evenly over the diamond, and so far so good. His on base percentage has been good. His base running has been good, and his defense has been incredible. And yes, it would be nice to see him get a couple more hits in there. I think that's just going to come as he gets more comfortable. Any more positivity to shine on Dalton? Because I've been impressed.
It turns out he has an arm on him too, because
yeah.
The biggest selling piece for me was that this kid has spectacular range and a glove to match. I didn't know he had an absolute snot rocket of an arm attached to him.
Yeah, it didn't.
That throw last night when the runner tagged at third and he gunned him out at home. It was
he beat him by 20 feet to the plate.
Yeah. Yeah, it was not even close. So who knows? Yeah, a lot of love for Dalton Marshall.
You only need to do that a few times before that runner's not tagging running. Up. Yep. Love to see it. All right. Well, let's end on that. Thank you so much to the grounds crew. All of you listening here. We really appreciate this walk-off community. You folks, we couldn't be here without you. If you haven't hit the like button, Billy, hit it. Get your brother Tutu. feel free to subscribe. By the way, I know that we have had a couple people from YouTube reach out who was just like, hey, I don't really listen to you guys on the audio side of things, but I did leave a good comment and hit subscribe. So, wow. Number one, yeah, we'll thank you that. So much to anyone who is doing that for both platforms, because we know you're only listening on one. So you're just taking time out of your day to help us out and let me know. Or let me tell you, it is appreciated. All right, everybody. We will see you on Friday. Tomorrow, we are releasing our interview of Nazwell Paulino of the Dunedin Blue Jays, that low A affiliate of the Jays. Great little interview. Check it out.
And goodbye.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh! Oscar with a drive. Cheese and crackers. Chose to pitch to him. Long move.
Thanks for listening.